Now, Irish mortgage rates fell to their lowest level in years in September, according to new figures from the central bank. This is in contrast to the rest of the Eurozone, where rates have risen dramatically over the past 6 months. Head of communications at bonkers.ie, Dara Cassidy, joins us. Good morning to you, Dara.
Good morning.
So, I suppose, summarise that for us. Good news or bad news, and should we be getting carried away?
Well, it is good news, but I don't think the good news is going to last very long. That's the problem. For a long period of time, your listeners might know that we had among the highest mortgage rates in the Eurozone, probably for years. And over the past few months, there's been an unusual situation in that banks in other countries have begun to push up their mortgage rates quite significantly in response to increases in interest rates by the ECB, the European Central Bank. But the main lenders here actually haven't, which is obviously something to be welcomed. So what that means is, as rates have shot up and in fact have almost doubled in the Eurozone, they've almost crept down here over the past few months. So we've gone from having among the most expensive mortgage rates to having the eighth lowest rates, which is quite the turnaround. But unfortunately, as I said, I don't think that's going to last. And I think over the next few weeks, we're going to see AIB, Bank of Ireland and Permanent TSB in particular announce increases in their rates.
So Irish mortgage rates are at 2.5% in September. The average interest rate on a new mortgage in Ireland was down from the 2.64% rate recorded in August. So in summary, is that kind of saying to people, if you want to maybe change or get on the mortgage ladder, is to do so as quick as you can while they're so low?
Yeah, it is, because as you probably know, the ECB over the past few months has increased interest rates by 2%. So for a long time, we had ultra-low interest rates. Now, we never really benefited from those ultra-low interest rates. For a while, in some countries in Europe, you could get a mortgage rate for maybe 1-1.5%. That was never the case in Ireland. We were paying rates of maybe 3-3.5%. But now the ECB is going to increase rates. It's likely it's going to increase rates again to 2.5%. In December, and then early next year, rates will probably hit 3%, which would mean then that mortgage rates here, cheapest mortgage rates, would be maybe 4%. So at the moment, the cheapest mortgage rate is just over 2%. That goes to show you that mortgage rates are probably going to creep up. So my advice to people, though, is particularly it's to variable rate customers. So some of your listeners might be on variable rates. They could be paying maybe 3.5-4.5% on their mortgage. My advice to them would be to look at locking into a relatively long-term fixed rate while those low rates are still available. So Permanent TSB has a rate of only 2.05%, and Bank of Ireland has rates of around maybe, between 2-3%, as do some of the other lenders. If you're on a tracker, get good financial advice, because it may or may not make sense to move off the tracker. But the thing I suppose to really reiterate to listeners is that rates are on the way up. And unfortunately, if you have a mortgage, unless you look at fixing, you're likely to see higher repayments over the coming months, which is kind of the last thing people want to hear in the midst of, an energy crisis and with prices and so on going up across the board.
How else are we comparing then with other countries around the Eurozone? They seem to have shot up everywhere else, remaining steady enough here, though.
Yeah, no, so I mean, like I said, we're at 2.58%, which is the lowest level in years. Latvia, though, leads the pack at 3.9%, and Greece, it's 3.37%. The Eurozone average is 2.4%, so we're quite close to that average. And I would suspect, actually, next month when the figures are released, we'll actually be below the Eurozone average, which would really be a huge turnaround in the space for a short period of time. If you want the cheapest mortgage rates, though, France is where to go. You can get one there for 1.7% on average. And then Malta is not far behind. But around this time last year, you get rates below, well below 1% in places like Finland and Portugal. So they really shot up throughout Europe, whereas here they've remained remarkably steady. In fact, they've even reduced a little bit, but probably not going to last much longer. AIB increased its interest rates quite recently by 0.5 percentage points, and the other lenders will probably follow. Some of them have already followed, ICS Mortgages, Avant Money, the so-called non-bank lenders have announced big interest rate increases over the past few months. The main lenders haven't, but it's unlikely to remain that way for much longer.
That's the situation in terms of mortgages, and some good advice there, Dara. While I have you, what about electricity then? Because bonkers.ie talks about mortgages and also electricity providers comparing prices there. Coming into, or we now are in the winter months, what's the advice you'd have for listeners about switching energy providers?
I mean, the advice doesn't change. You know, switch every year. While some of the discounts that are on offer have gone down, so maybe 12 or 13 months ago, maybe only a few months ago, you could have gotten a discount of maybe 30 to 40%. That's gone down maybe to about maybe 10%. But because gas and electricity prices are at record highs, that 10% discount still equates to a saving of maybe €300 to €400 on average. So if you haven't switched in recent times, make sure you switch over the next 2 weeks, because this is really the one winter that you don't want to be paying, you know, more than you need to for your gas and the electricity. And if you did recently switch, well, then make sure that you switch again when you come to the end of your 1 year contract, because when you come to the end of your contract, that discount usually goes. And I think people are now beginning to see the first of the winter bills come in, and there was big price increases announced over the past 2 weeks by all the main suppliers, and that's really feeding through, I think, into people's bills now. So there's going to be a lot of shocks, I think, when people get the bill in the post or by email over the coming weeks, unfortunately. And then on top of that, as always, check out little ways that you can use less energy around the home. So on bonkers.ie, we've lots of tips. The SEAI, the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland, has tips as well around what you can do to make, save a little bit of money.
Okay, Head of Communications at bonkers.ie, Dara Cassidy, thanks again for your time this morning. Dara, good morning.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
All right, we're going back now to the Naas Municipal District meeting of a couple of days ago. Green Party Councillor Colm Kenny joins us. Good morning, Colm.
Good morning, Owen, and good morning to your listeners.
Issues that you raised at that meeting, and first of all, you wanted the council to allocate larger bicycle parking spaces in the Naas Municipal District. What response did you get?
Yeah, okay, so just recently there in that in the recent budget, a greater incentive or allowance was allowed for cargo bikes. So these are like sort of larger bikes where families could, you know, parents could bring maybe one or two children along, or people could go shopping and bring their shopping home. And this isn't reinventing the wheel here, because even I remember, you know, the old Post and Telegraph bicycles when the postmen were able to deliver, you know, the large volumes of post on a bicycle. It's not a new concept here. I got actually two reports from two different departments as such that the council are looking at this, how it's working out maybe in the greater Dublin area, and are waiting for feedback from other councils in those areas. And also, so if this was to come about, if they're to allocate more space for these larger cargo bikes, that it would be all included with sort of the whole idea behind EV charging points and charging hubs and bicycle lockers and sort of more long-term parking for bicycle infrastructure.
Okay, you're also looking for the council to clear the gullies and dig drainage channels along the R407. This is in the townland of Blackhall between Bowdenstown and Alexandra Bridge in Clane.
Correct, Owen. You know, as you leave the Salons in Bowdenstown and the new roundabout there and head out along that road past Blackhall Stud with the Liffey on your left-hand side, towards Alexandra Bridge and Clane. There's a lot, you know, since the weather again has changed recently, there's a lot of surface water settling there. And look, I asked for the gullies to be clean and for side cuttings to be made so that drainage and the water could flow away. Now, I also kind of had a suggestion there that actually there last month, the Alexandra Bridge was closed. So I was just wondering if the council could kind of overlap when maybe a utility company or something had got this closure, and that's a very, very busy road, and maybe it would be easier for this work to be done. Now, unfortunately, the council said, look, that time has passed and the opportunity has passed, but you know, maybe going forward they could work together with utility companies and maybe get work done in conjunction.
Okay, for these next two questions that you brought forward, you were on the Kilcullen Road in Naas with Tasker Heights. First of all, you wanted traffic calming measures to be brought in there at that estate, and then you were looking for the footpath on the Kilcullen Road in Naas to be repaired.
Yeah, so yeah, both here in the Kilcullen Road, yeah. So Rathaskar Heights, you know, sort of very settled estate there, and sort of that south end of the town, one of the closer estates to the town centre. So, you know, they do have a little bit of, you know, extra parking, people coming in and parking up in that area. But also, so as one turns into that estate, there is a, straight ahead, there is a cul-de-sac, but there's not many houses on that cul-de-sac, maybe 10, 11 houses. And there's a left turn off that straight road, which brings you to more houses in Rathaskar Heights, and then Carrickoscar has another estate has kind of piggybacked in there as well, which much more houses. I mean, all in there could be maybe 50 houses there. So the Residents Association had come to me basically, and they were just they kind of want to give a priority designation to that left hand turn. Now look, the council, unfortunately, they said look, they really weren't going to, they hadn't plans at the moment to look at this. So I think we will be revisiting this later on in the year.
What about the footpath on the Kilcullen Road?
Yeah, no, look, funny enough, there's areas, again, a specific area where there is at a crossing point there near the Kilcullen Road roundabout. And there's specifically some subsidence in a section of this footpath. So I just asked them to look at that. And that response was somewhat more positive, that they said they would assess it and take a look at it, hopefully address it.
Okay, just while you're with us, Colm, I want to ask you about the Kill Equestrian Centre to get your views on that. You were at the meeting on Friday night. We've seen what's been happening over the last couple of days. You're the Green Party councillor on the NACE MD, Vincent P. Martin, of course, Green Party senator. This whole area is overseen by Minister Roderick O'Gorman at the Department of Integration. What representation have you made on behalf of residents in Kill?
Yeah, thanks, Owen. Look, I was at that meeting on Friday night in Kill GA, and look, there was a lot of opinions expressed there. I can see the issues there. I would have been very familiar with that whole area. That was maybe Irish Kellett's, the equestrian centre was used, developed initially from the for the equestrian events at the Special Olympics back in 2003. Yeah, look, this, you know, I can see the issues there in the village that, you know, the schools, is there enough capacity in schools for this? Healthcare, I mean, I know from my own background in the hospital, there's really only one GP operating there. The area itself, yes, there is an issue in the past, I believe, with flooding. So it's not ideal in that sense. And more information should maybe have been coming from the department on this. But we do have to be cognizant too, Owen, that, like, you know, there genuinely is a lot of people escaping this war in the Ukraine at the moment. And, you know, they're coming into other EU countries and they will be coming here to Ireland. And we really, you know, there is a lot of pressure. In fairness, it's acknowledged even by opposition parties that Roderick O'Gorman's department is under severe pressure here on this. And hopefully this will create an incentive that, you know, maybe other buildings, I know there's talk to move on the Ray House there. You know, that's laid idle for such a long time. And also personally, I must say there's talk of the army barracks and the Curran, and there's a lot of vacant and derelict houses on the Curra, and they really need to be repurposed and reused for the locals as well, you know.
So in terms of the representations you made on behalf of the locals in Kill, you went to Minister Roderick O'Gorman, did you? You went to his office?
Yeah, no, I had communication there, and I did certainly pass on those. I mean, there was a you know, I did get representations, a sort of standard template from a lot of the residents outlining five or six different issues, and I did former them on. And look, I'm awaiting feedback on that. I certainly know they took those issues on board.
All right, and obviously, as we've covered here on the programme for the last couple of days, that site, the Kill Equestrian Centre, earmarked to house up to 348 Ukrainian refugees, but obviously a lot still to be done in terms of what happens there. With that and other issues brought forward to the recent NACE Municipal District meeting, Green Party councillor on the NACE MD, Colm Kenny. Thanks, Colm.
Thanks very much, Owen. Thank you.
Now we're heading elsewhere in North Kildare over to Clane Maynooth. Councillor Pádraig McAvoy, independent councillor for the district, does join me. Good morning.
Kira, good morning. How are you?
I am fine, thank you very much. I actually spoke to another NACE councillor yesterday, Bill Clear, about what you brought forward at your monthly meeting of Clane Maynooth. It's about the zebra crossing on the Kilcock Road in particular, and the NTA's announcement of the new approaches. That's without the beacon lights, the flashing lights. We did discuss it with Bill, as I noted, but what exactly were you asking the council to do, and what was the response you received, Pádraig?
Look, Kira, we in the week leading up to the meeting motion submissions, there was someone got on to us about an issue of crossing the road, the Kilcock Road in Clane, and it's near the village. In order to try and progress things, there's a bit of a hold up in waiting on a road to be implemented in Capdu before they can reconfigure some of the traffic flow at the area. But I asked them whether they could emphasise the actual crossing point that they have now without having to add the cost of zebra crossing lights. So your listeners may have heard the explanation from Bill that there could be up to 80 or 90,000 euros to implement a set of beacon lights at a crossing. But there are other techniques for implementing a crossing without that expense. And I was kind of hoping that there might be some progress to be made on it. I suppose the council is still waiting for details on that approach. But there was also another discussion from Councillor Aidan Farrelly on the same issue. So the council are going to have to look at the site and are looking for points and ideas from the public, and they'll come back with a recommendation in the near future.
Okay, if we move to the L1023, that's the Balnagapa Road in Clane, you're speaking about the need for in-lane parking along it. What is in-lane parking?
Well, it's a relatively narrow road. The fact that it's an L number tells you that it's a smaller road than a regional road. To facilitate maybe access to the town, there has historically been parking on the road, leaving a relatively narrow gap between the middle lane, or the line in the middle of the road, and the left-hand side as you drive forward into the village. There have been a few people on to me about the parking there impeding flow and being dangerous to cyclists and pedestrians. It was recently I was told of some damage to a car that was parked there, and there's two new housing or residential schemes across the road from this parking. So you're asking the County Council, is it continually, or is it going to be safe to leave that type of parking there given the increased traffic in the area and the expectation that there will be more cyclists in the district? So they're going to go back and look at it. They feel the need to engage with stakeholders nearby, which I understand, and to see whether there's alternative parking available than leaving the cars on the road and putting the cyclists and other road users at risk.
Okay, Pádraig, if we move now to you asking about engineering options. This is for the availability to the council for repair to bog roads that incur. It's due to changes in the water levels, which we will see more, obviously, over this winter period.
That's right, Kira. A number of the NACE councillors, and Owen joined us, were at a meeting out in Timahoe a few weeks back. And it was raised with us, the state, for want of better work, the public's perception of the difficulties of travelling on certain roads, where the road surface had changed quite a lot. And the explanation that I had going to that meeting was that it was due to the increased rates of drying up under the road, and then in the winter time, the increased rates of it getting wet. So the strong difference between the dry period and the wet period was making it difficult to stabilise the surface or the structure of the road. And I had heard that there had been some work done to stabilise another bog road. I was just looking at the budget in the work programme. About 300,000 was spent on trying to keep some bog roads open and functioning and safe to use. And I suppose that was an example. People say that climate change isn't really happening in Ireland. I know some would. And I understand why they would say that. They say it'd be more weather than climate. But actually, the severity of the road buckling and the cost to keep them open is an example of the kind of challenges that we're going to face into the future. And I suppose that report came in the same week that the COP27 was being operated or being run in Egypt. And I suppose we're just trying to relate the two things together.
And did the council give you any more, conversation around the topic of climate change?
Not the engineers now at this discussion. I suppose it was a question, and in the meetings we tend to just consider the report, ask for clarification. But I know in terms of climate action, the climate action officer and the road sustainable transport officers in the council will be working with the councillors and the public to mitigate the effects of climate change and hopefully reduce the emissions going into the atmosphere that's causing it.
Okay, independent councillor for Clane-Maynooth Municipals District, that is Pádraig McAvoy. Good morning to you, Pádraig.
KFM's Legal Slot with Susan Webster and Company Family Law Solicitors. Phone 01-629-2200.
Yes, it's hard to believe it's week six and the final week of our Legal Slot with Susan Webster, and Susan's on the line with us once again. Good morning, Susan.
Morning, Owen. How are you?
I'm good. We're going to be talking about employment law in a moment. First of all, though, I want to congratulate you on winning Sole Practitioner of the Year in Leinster and in Ireland in the Law Awards. So, great achievement for yourself.
Thanks so much. Yeah, no, it was absolutely wonderful. I was actually really shocked at the night, and it was a great night. There was a big gala dinner in the Aviva, and Ivan Yates presented, and I won the Leinster Sole Practitioner, and then the overall for the whole country, so Sole Practitioner of the Year. So I'm so thankful and grateful, and obviously I have to say thank you to all my lovely clients and colleagues and who've been so supportive and sent such lovely messages, and to all the listeners of KFM too, who I get such lovely messages from and have had lovely chats with as well. So thank you, and thanks for having me on, Owen. It's just been a pleasure. So hopefully we'll come back, and we've so many other things to revisit, and we might do another 6 week turn soon.
Absolutely. It's been great having you back on the show over the last number of weeks, Susan. Some very important topics that we discussed. And this week is another one. And actually, looking through the briefing notes this morning, it's one of the largest volume of briefing notes that we've had, because there's so much to cover in terms of employment law. We're going to look at sick leave and leave from work in general.
We are. And employment law, it's such a huge amount of topics that we could cover in employment law in general. And also, in respect of even just, I wanted to look at leave from work. And there's so many changes, lots of changes coming from the EU, changes coming from laws that are being brought into play here. So things are changing all the time. And it's very hard for employees. You know, most people are trying to keep up with life in general and their work in general. So to keep an eye on what's happening with employment law, it's very, very difficult for people. I do want to mention straight away the Sick Leave Act, which became law on the 20th of July this year. This is something that's been awaited a long time in Ireland. It really has brought in a huge change, because up to now, there's been no statutory entitlement to paid sick leave. So that meant if you were sick from work, one of two things had to happen. One, you had to look at your contract of employment. And I'd urge anybody just to have a look at your contract of employment now. Most contracts are drafted and are written in such a way that you should be able to read it without the help of any solicitor or lawyer. So go and dig it out and have a look at it. Because in your contract of employment, it will set out if you were entitled to paid sick leave or not. And for most people, you were not, in the private sector, I should say, you were not entitled to paid sick leave. Your employer didn't have to pay if you were sick. There was no other statutory minimum sick leave that you were entitled to, but if you were on sick leave from work, you would get sick benefit from the Department of Social Protection. That has now changed. So from the 20th of July this year, the Sick Leave Act 2022 became law. It's not going to commence till the 1st of January next year, at which point you'll be entitled to 3 days paid sick leave from work. And that rises incrementally year on year up to 10 days paid sick leave in 2026. Now, there are some requirements you have to satisfy. You have to give a GP cert. You have to have been employed for a period of 13 weeks or more with your employer. And the pay isn't your full pay. It's 70% of your normal wages, to a maximum of €110 per day. But it is a big change for people that you are now entitled to paid sick leave from work from your employer. And that is a big change that will be coming into force next year, and will keep increasing year on year. The other leave that I do want to mention, in that always causes not problems for people, but they're always wondering about it, is your annual leave from work. What is are your annual leave entitlements? So again, I always say to people, if you have a contract of employment, which you should, and that's something we might cover at another time, go and look in your contract. Your contract should set out what are your entitlements to annual leave. If there's nothing in your contract, if it's totally silent, or if it says you get your statutory minimum, then your statutory minimum are 4 weeks paid annual leave, and that's under the Organisation of Working Time Act from 1997. And of course, you have your public holidays, etc. So they're the two leaves that often cause people the most worry or problems. Moving away from that, what I really wanted to focus on today was the leave from work that you take to care for children, because there have been huge changes in this area in recent years, both from EU law and from domestic Irish law. And as recently as July of this year, there was a change in parents' leave, which increased from 5 to 7 weeks. And we'll have a look at that in a moment. So the leave that most people know that you take if you're going to look after a child is maternity leave. And we'll just touch on this briefly. There haven't been any huge changes in this in recent times. But if you're an employee, whether you work full time, casually, part time, whether you've been working for your employer for, you know, 6 weeks or 6 years or longer, you are entitled to take maternity leave up to a period of 26 weeks if you become pregnant, and you can then take an additional 16 weeks maternity leave after that. You must take 2 weeks before your baby is due and then 4 weeks after. People often ask, is maternity leave paid? Again, you'll hear me say this again and again, have a look at your contract. Your employer is not obliged to pay you when you are on maternity leave, but a lot of employers do, or what they will do is, if they won't pay you, you're entitled to maternity benefit from the Department of Social Protection. That's €250 per week, I think, as matters stand. And some employers will just top you up then. So check your contract of employment. But if there's no maternity pay from your employer, you will get maternity benefit from the Department of Social Protection. That's for the 26 weeks basic maternity leave. After that, the 16 weeks are unpaid if you're in the lucky position to be able to take that. How you take maternity leave, you must, most people will tell their employer well in advance that they're pregnant, but you must give them at least 4 weeks in writing before you want to start maternity leave. And you also have to apply for maternity benefits from the Department of Social Protection 6 weeks before you intend to go on maternity leave. As with all of these leaves, when you are on any of these leaves, you are treated as still being in employment. So your employer can't change your terms and conditions on their own. They certainly can't make your terms and conditions worse than when you were in work, and you are protected from dismissal. Those are all very important things. Lots of people get worried. You know, they're not sure what's going on in the workplace. You are treated as if you are still in work. And also, so you're still accruing your annual leave. You're still collecting that annual leave and collecting your public holidays, etc. When you're returning to work, then you must give your employer 4 weeks notice, and you must be allowed to come back to your job, to your old job, to the job that you left, and return to do the same work that you left as per your contract of employment and before you left from work. And there's so much else to talk about, but I want to just hop on to paternity leave, which, again, is a relatively new concept in Irish law over the last number of years. It gives new parents 2 weeks off work within 6 months of the child's birth. So for paternity leave, it's usually the father of the child who takes paternity leave. But it is also available to same-sex couples. So if you're the father of the child, or if you're a partner of the mother of the child, be that a cohabitant, a civil partner or a husband, or if you're the parent of a donor conceived child, then your partner is taking maternity leave, then you are entitled to paternity leave. As I said, you must take 2 weeks within the first 6 months of the child's birth. Again, you give 4 weeks notice to your employer. You are not entitled to paternity pay from your employer, but lots of employers, particularly the big companies or the more progressive, perhaps, companies, will give paternity leave and will offer, in fact, more and more generous paternity leave, paid longer weeks, etc. But your statutory minimum is 2 weeks. And if you don't get paid by your employer, then you may be entitled to paternity benefit from the Department of Social Protection. And again, I think it's at the same rate as maternity leave. So that's really, in one sense, covering mother and father. But we have a new concept as well of parents' leave. And that entitles each parent up to 6 weeks leave during the first 2 years of the child's life. And that is vitally important. So it may be that the father wants to take an extra number of weeks when the baby, or the other parent wants to take an extra number of weeks when the child is born. Or it may be that, for example, the mother wants to take, after their maternity leave has ended, in the second year of the child's life, they want to take some leave. Again, check your contract of employment, because lots of employers are now giving generous parent leave, be that extra time or paid, If not, your statutory minimum is 7 weeks within the first 2 years of the child's life, and you're not entitled to be paid by your employer, but you may qualify for parent benefit, which is again €250 per week. That leave actually changed this year from the 1st of July, from 5 weeks to 7 weeks. So there is recognition that you know, parents having time with very small children is important, and that society should be ensuring that that can take place by way of letting, you know, having this leave and allowing people to take leave, even if it's not paid, with the benefit of a social welfare benefit. I would say for parents' leave, you must give 6 weeks' notice to your employer. And you can either take it as a continuous period of 7 weeks, or you can take it in separate periods of not less than 1 week. So that can be very helpful for people. For example, if you're taking a midterm break or Easter holidays or something like that. And also, just to note, obviously, if you are pregnant and you're taking maternity leave, your employer can't ask you to defer it. And much the same for paternity, which is usually the father or the other parent. You know, the baby's born at a certain time. Your employer can't say, well, could you defer that, please? But for parents' leave, your employer could ask you to postpone it for up to 12 weeks for various reasons. And they'll have to give you those reasons, etc. But most employers are very amenable to these types of leave.
Can I just come in there quickly, Susan, just to ask a question? Does that apply for both part-time and full-time workers? Or what's the difference there in terms of entitlements regarding the contracts?
So whether you're employed part-time, full-time, you're entitled to your parents' leave and maternity leave and paternity leave, all of these leaves.
Okay, very good.
Okay. Just in relation to the last one is parental leave. And lots of people know parental leave because we've had it, it's based on EU law. It's changed a number of times in the last few years. It is unpaid leave that you can take, and you can take up to 26 weeks per child up to their 12th birthday or up to their 16th birthday if your child has a disability or a long-term illness. Again, this is your minimum entitlement. Lots of employers will give more. You know, lots of people will say, gosh, I'm really not in a position to take unpaid leave. But where it can be helpful for people is maybe in the summer holidays, or maybe, again, midterm breaks, Easter, things like that, because you can, and that's where this is vitally important, you can break this down. And some employers will actually let people work, you know, part-time hours based on their unpaid parental leave entitlement that they would use. And that may be worthwhile for people, for example, if children are in school and they then want to take some leave rather than paying a childminder, it might work out financially more viable for people in that manner. And of course, if you have more than one child, you can take more than 26 weeks. You can only take 26 weeks in a period of 1 year unless your employer otherwise agrees. And lots of employers are very amenable to this and are very helpful to their employees because they value their employees. For this, you must give 6 weeks' notice to your employee. And again, if you give the notice to your employer and there's some difficulty, they can only refuse it if you are not entitled to take it. And that actually goes across the board for all of these. So, for example, if you're not pregnant, you can't take maternity leave. But if you are entitled to take it, they can't refuse your request. But for parental leave, they can ask you to postpone it for a period of time. And lots of employers and employees will come to agreements in respect of things like that. Again, when you're returning to work, you return to the same job that you had previously. And in fact, what some people do is they ask for maybe more flexible working arrangements. And you can do that at any time for any reason. Your employer doesn't have to agree to it, but you can seek that, and you are entitled to it under law to ask if that's what you would like to do.
Okay, great stuff. It's been very, very comprehensive, and great to have you back on the show again, Susan. As I mentioned from the outset, we've been discussing various issues for the last 6 weeks. If you missed any of those, by the way, they are on our website under the podcast section. In week one, we discussed wills. Week two, separation and divorce. Week three, maintenance and access. Week four, power of attorney. Week five, domestic violence. And this is week six, discussing employment law, which will be up on the website later on this afternoon. Susan Webster, thanks so much for the coverage over the last few weeks.
Thanks so much for having me on. Thank you.
Thanks indeed.
KFM's legal slot with Susan Webster and Company Family Law Solicitors. Phone 01 629 2200.